You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Shot blocked. Porzingis with his fourth projection. Courtney Lee for three.
Beasley lines up. Ntilikina.
What he does is contagious. Because it touches.
And across the lane. Baker launches. Jack to Porzingis. Fires up the ball.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of explaining, complaining, but most of all, entertaining. I'm your host, James Marcina, a.k.a. the Brooklyn J. Billis. You may know me as the founder of NBA Injury Report on Twitter. And this is episode 312. Woo! On today's show, we're joined by Ashwin Ramnath of Posting and Toasting. He's here to talk about the idea of drafting a big with the 9th overall pick in the 2018 NBA Draft. I'm not really into it, full disclosure. But I'm going to let Ashwin try to talk me into it, because he's obsessed with the idea of drafting a big, as we dissect the games of Duke big men Wendell Carter Jr. and Marvin Bagley III. This is a two-parter, so in today's show, we're going to talk about the general idea of drafting a big, then we're going to go in-depth on Wendell Carter Jr., the Duke big man who may be around when the Knicks draft. Probably not. On tomorrow's show, we'll cover Marvin Bagley III, who almost certainly won't be available, but he's just going to kind of help round out our big man discussion, and we'll wrap up with some closing thoughts on bigs in the modern game and two big lineups and all that good stuff. So, without delaying this thing any farther, actually, I'm going to delay it. Just 1 minute. We are in the middle right now of something very exciting. The Locked On Network NBA Mock Draft. All the Locked On hosts are getting together on the Locked On NBA feed and doing a mock draft for this season. And we're breaking it up 6 picks at a time. The first episode is available now. You can check it out for picks 1 through 6. On Thursday, I'm going to pick the mock draft. It's an interesting one. Some of you guys are going to hate who I pick. Some of you guys are going to love, but I know you all will find it interesting. So on Thursday, check out Locked On NBA to hear who I pick in the mock draft. All right, that's it. Let's bring in Ashwin. Hit it, Marv.
Yes.
So my first question for you, Ashwin, it's a two-parter. I'm going to give them to you both at once. Then you can decide, you know, how you want to handle it. All right.
Okay.
All right. So.
All right. Let's do it.
All right. So
let's
part
get into it.
Part one. Why are you completely obsessed with the idea that the Knicks must draft a big in this draft? And part two, what is wrong with you?
No, okay. I don't think the Knicks have to draft a big in this
must
draft.
Draft a big. That's what I'm hearing online.
I do think that it's like are there like 3 things I would ideally, if we acquire another pick, that if I had my ideal draft, mm-hmm. like we would hit these 3 positions. And I don't, in order of importance, I think a wing or a combo forward is the most important. Then I think a combo guard would be second most important. And then third most important would be like a 4 or 5, some kind of big that can stretch the floor, either stretch the floor on offense or like be rangy and be able to defend on the perimeter more.
So is that because you don't expect any of the center depth that's currently there to be part of the long-term plans?
I think that I think Cornett is probably not part of the long-term plans. Mm-hmm. I hope that Enes Kanter is not part of the long-term plans.
Right.
I do hope Kylo Quinn is part of the long-term plans, uh-huh. but even if he is, I still think that we need another. We can't, our big man depth can't just be like O'Quinn, Porzingis, and Prayers.
Right. I mean, so for me, when I look at how I want this team constructed, ideally, I do think they need big man depth, but I'd rather it not be someone who they feel compelled to play basically really big minutes with KP. I mean, that of course depends on who you're talking about, but when I'm looking at this year's draft, like, I'd much rather see a big man get drafted with, you know, 36 overall, their second round pick.
So am I hearing you say that you absolutely, under any condition, don't want any big men on this team other than Porzingis?
Basically. That's kind of where I'm at right
now. See, like, all right, I can't get there because, like, first of all, until Kristaps shows me that he's going to be able to do crazy things like get 8 or 9 rebounds per game.
Like, I thought you were going to go with play a full season, but that was a good one too. Yeah.
I'm not going to go with that hot take there. Okay. I'll save that one for later. All right. But there's just things. He's a difficult. He does things that are amazing, right? Like, I just want to get this out of the way because I'm going to also now shit on parts of his game. But like, he does things that are legitimately franchise caliber player level, or like potentially you can see growing to that point, right?
Yeah.
Like, he has gravity. I know his shooting efficiency overall hasn't like gone to where you would hope based on his splits, but like, I mean, we'll not delve into the whole Jeff Hornacek coaching
thing.
But you know, like, I think that better system, better coach, better surrounding talent, even like all those things will lead to him becoming more efficient. But you can already see, like, when he's out there from three and he catches the ball, like, teams aren't just like, oh, yeah, just let him shoot. No, it's like, it's part of their game plan to run him off the line.
Yes,
like,
and I think I'm a big believer in the fact that this past season was more of like a, you got to throw some clay on the table before you can mold it, to use just a brilliant analogy. And he was throwing the clay out of being the primary guy. Like, he showed that he's at least dangerous enough. He didn't have the efficiency at the end of the year, really, but he showed that he's dangerous enough that, like you said, guys are game planning for him. Obviously, he had that stretch in the beginning where he was just unstoppable, and I think, you know, getting that, you know, it wasn't a given that Carmelo was not going to be here, and I am not going to talk anymore about Carmelo, but that was his first year being the first guy. He threw up a bunch of attempts. He didn't do his best job at picking his spots, but we saw the ability one day to be a super efficient, you know, if he keeps improving, first option franchise type guy on that side of the ball for sure.
Yeah, and I don't even, there's so many things that we can do with him that we have not done with him yet, and that I expect, that I'm hoping that Fizdale will do with him. Mm-hmm. So like, yeah, like I he's a potentially, you know, just super valuable offensive player, and like, even just, you know, the fact that Jared Jack had like a reasonable year for what you would expect from Jared Jack kind of speaks to like what he can create for others just with his, like we talked about, like his gravity, like the attention he gets.
Yeah.
And then obviously, like, defensively, you know, for as much as I'm like, I, his inability to rebound or unwillingness or whatever, it bothers me. Like, there's no question that obviously he's a massive game changer on defense, just with his shot blocking, rim protection. I even thought last year, like, he was kind of getting to the point where it wasn't even close. It wasn't Gobert level where like guys just wouldn't even come into the paint when he was down there. But you could kind of see, like, there were times guys would drive and they'd see KP and they'd be like, kick it out.
Or they'd float it like a tick earlier than they wanted to, and that was definitely borne out in the opponent's effective field goal percentage against him.
Or
field goal percentage against, I should say, just in the paint. It was, everyone shot way less than they usually do. I mean, I guess I have general questions, but maybe it doesn't about, you know, playing with another big beside KP, but maybe we should just kind of approach them as we talk about our first big man prospect. I mean, unless you have any other big picture thoughts before we start, but I feel like we should just get into Wendell Carter Jr.
Yeah, I mean, we can do big picture, like, within the smaller picture.
Yes. So
picture in picture.
So Wendell Carter Jr., the basics. He's a 19.1-year-old freshman out of Duke, so good age as far as there being lots of upside there, time to improve. Of course, he's from Duke, and that's a strike against him. Apologies to extremely overrated defensive stalwart Lance Thomas and his alma mater. Wendell Carter Jr. is 6'10" with a 7'4.5" wingspan, 251 pounds, 7.8% body fat, which, you know, I'm probably a little bit higher than that, but he's no Shea Gilgis, gorgeous Gilgeous Alexander either. So he's somewhere, you know.
Is Gilgeous Alexander like -5?
He is, I believe it's 3.5 or 3.85, which was which was like a point lower than anyone in the draft. Dude,
I would love to have that metabolism.
I basically do, like, because I should be 700 pounds and dead by now. And yet I'm about a svelte 30 pounds over my goal weight, so I'm doing pretty good. Wendell Carter Jr., to complete the basics, he's got, we don't know his vertical leap, because he's a coward who can't jump, and he did not submit to it at the combine, although he did show up, unlike his teammate Marvin Bagley, who we'll talk about in a little bit. So we do have those measurements from the combine from Wendell Carter Jr. But I don't know. I am very anti-big man. So why don't you start by talking about this guy? See if you can do a little. I said this on Twitter. I think my only virtue I have left is my willingness to have my mind changed by a good argument. Everything else has long ago been abandoned in the pursuit of fame and fortune. I think just survival. Just in the pursuit of survival. But talk to me about Wendell Carter Jr. What's good about this guy? Why do you think he could make sense next to KP on the Knicks?
Okay, well, the reason why he does make sense next to KP on the Knicks.
Let's hear it.
So he does this thing.
Actually, you know what? Really cool. You know what? Before you do that, cliffhanger, you guys are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you like what you hear, head on over to iTunes and rate us 5 stars. Once again, that's Locked On Knicks, your team every day. All right, sorry, but I just had to do it to him. Had to do it to him.
So, yeah, I mean, first of all, there are three things in some capacity I think any big man that you get, that you draft, has to be able to do, right? Because, I mean, even me, as someone that's fine with taking a big man, is not unaware that, like, there's some difficulties involved, right? So they need to be good at defensive rebounding, for sure. They have to be able to pass, like playmake a little bit, and they have to have some semblance of shooting ability, right? Those are the three things I think they absolutely all have to have. And the playmaking isn't actually necessary if they're enough of a shooting threat, but I don't think Wendell Carter, at least not at this point in his life, is enough of a, like, he shot, what, 41% from three last year?
Yeah.
But I think he attempted 46 threes.
That is
right?
Correct.
So, like,
yeah.
he'll pull if he's open, but he's not at that point where he's just going to take, like, three or four a game, right? So, that's a work in progress. I think it's one that he will make. Maybe, I mean, I don't think he's going to be a 41% shooter in the NBA, but I think he can get to like 37-38%, enough to the point where you have to actually respect him out
there. I think his shot looks solid. It's not like a KP, you know, damn, that's wet. It looks like a shooting guard, but I think he has a chance to honestly be like an Embiid-esque, like, just big dude with a good solid shot. Cousins?
Yeah, like Cousins, because Embiid's actually, like, I think he shot like 32% from three, and he should actually
see that low. Like,
yeah, he's another, he's,
I guess,
awesome.
Fucking Bead, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's awesome, but, like, yeah, I don't know why he's pulling that many threes out there. But, yeah, I mean, like, 36, 37, something like that, around that range, I can totally see him getting up to there. But anyway, I just want to get, so, like, yeah, defensively, we'll get into that later, but, yeah, just his playmaking, you know, he averaged, so last year he averaged at Duke 2 assists a game. And look, that's not like this incredibly high number.
No.
But he averaged that in 27 minutes. And, you know, big men, their assist numbers are just never going to be, even the better passing big men, unless you're Jokic or something, you're not going to be a super high number. But if you just watch him on tape, like, he's comfortable making those high-low passes that Ennis could never make. He's comfortable. Like, when he gets the biggest one for me is when he's a really good offensive rebounder, but he's also not one of these guys that when he gets an offensive rebound, he's just going to like keep pumping, keep pump faking and try and go up with it himself all the time. Like, he's willing to kick it out to shooters. And I think those threes that you get off of those offensive rebounds are often like the best quality wide open threes that you can get. So he's producing those for you. He's also capable of hitting cutters out of the post when it's with his back to the basket or kicking it out to shooters. He's just very comfortable with the ball in his hands. And I mean, he averaged also 2 turnovers a game, but for me, like, just seeing what I saw of him, the turnovers were a function of him trying to make plays.
Okay.
Right. They were not him like dribbling into a double team and getting stripped, or just, you know, like, and they weren't even like him trying to make Hail Mary passes. It would be like him trying to make the right play and just, you know, not doing it because he got double teamed and he's rushing out of the double team because he's not used to that, and stuff like that where you see that. And I just think like that's somebody that will grow, and he will, like, he has the skill. He just needs to develop. He needs more reps to deal with that stuff. And I don't know, for me, like, when I just see a big man like that, I think a big man like that just adds dimensions to your team. And I think, like, as much as we want KP to play the five, like, I look at him right now and I just don't see a guy that is built to play the five all the time. Like, I barely see a guy that's able to play the five 50% of the time, if I'm being honest.
Have you seen his neck in his workout videos? This off's getting big.
Yeah,
I'm nice thick neck.
Yeah, I am not gonna watch any more of those workout videos. That's probably like, I'm weirdly just, I hate them so much.
I'm kind of with you. I get it, you know, this is your life, and if you're just, people kind of Instagram whatever they're doing every day, but they don't necessarily have a film crew who edits it and puts corny beats behind it.
It's like 24 minutes long or something, the last one. I don't need to see KP work out for 24 minutes.
He was releasing supercuts that were like 6 hours of him in the gym, you know, getting his big toe massaged by that bald creep of his.
Yeah, like, that's the other thing. Like, 6 minutes of this shit is him getting his thigh massaged. Why do I want to watch that? Like, what is appealing about this to me?
Don't kink shame me. Offensively is where I have pretty much no problem with him pairing with KP. But just for argument's sake, is his shot, we talked about him not getting up a lot of three-point attempts, although shooting a good percentage. I really am sick of seeing the lane clogged and KP being almost unable to even show if he can roll to the hoop. Part of, I think, his problem, when I say problem, I mean like not maximizing his full KP-ness, is that he... I'm just going to send this episode straight to the Smithsonian. It's my most mature work to date. My most fully developed and realized... No, but he does tend to pop a lot, and I think he could roll a little bit more. But a lot of that is just because Cantor's big butt is just parked down there. Will, do you think NBA defenses respect Carter's shot enough that when they play together, if they play together, KP will have some room to operate in the paint?
Well, I just think that with Cantor, like, okay, is the spacing ideal with two bigs on the floor, or in the sense of unlocking KP's full... potential, whatever. maybe not. I don't know. But like, I think a bigger problem was just Ennis. Like, you can play with two bigs and not feel like there's no space in the lane, right? Like Cantor was just literally in the lane all the time, and it was like he was unaware of KP would get the ball at the elbow or the post, and Cantor would already be like muscling right next to the basket for a rebound position. It's like, dude, get out of there for five. Like, just hang out on the baseline for like 10, like 5 seconds, and then you're going to get. So I when I see Carter, he just seems like a more aware player. We're going to talk about Bagley a little later anyway, but like, Carter wasn't just this like secondary big man guy. He wasn't right. Just some dude that they picked. Like, he was an elite top prospect, and he sacrificed his offensive game for, I don't want to say for Bagley, but for like the team, right? He did what he was asked to do.
Well, I'll and say that, this. Okay, sorry. Keep going.
No, and I just think that, like, I don't know what Ennis was told to do. It's possible that Hornacek didn't give him any instructions, or I don't know what. But
it's the sad thing. They'll figure it out. He's a veteran.
But like, Ennis has just always played the same way, right? His entire career, he's played the same way. Whereas like with Carter, in his 1 year at Duke, we already saw him change the way he played to suit the team.
I mean,
and like that to me speaks to an adaptability and a coachability, and just the kind of player you want in your group.
Yeah, no, I mean, I hear all that. I really like Carter as a prospect in a vacuum. Like, I do think he's an excellent big man prospect. I do think his shot is going to give him a little bit of unicorn potential. He doesn't have that kind of physical fluidity that you might associate with, you know, the most modern of bigs. But he's not plodding necessarily either. I mean, like you kind of said, he's got good handle for a big. He's got nice foot. He's just like a nice polished interior scorer. It's really only
there's no like glaring holes in his game is the best way to put it. Like he might not be the best at anything specifically, but there's nothing that you look at and you're like, he's cannot do this thing at all.
It's only when paired with another big that I have any concern. And, you know, with KP specifically. And part of that is just the defensive end. I'm not saying that I know that it can't work, but I'm definitely concerned, especially if you face more 4 and 5 out lineups. And I'm also concerned just by, you know, I think I have a good handle on the game of basketball. I don't consider myself, you know, a Mike D'Antoni-esque basketball genius or anything like that. But when I look at the best teams in the league, look at the top four, you know, teams this year by, you know, playoff, how far they went. They're playing these smaller lineups. They're not relying on these two big lineups, to which you have mentioned a couple of times online, the Utah Jazz. And I was kind of curious what you see and how they play that might be able to be duplicated. Because I am as guilty as anyone as being, you know, kind of a copycat thinker when you see what's successful out there. But why do you think that like the Jazz model is one that might work, that might be replicable? What's working for them that you think the Knicks could maybe take advantage here?
I mean, I just think that I'm not saying like KP is not a carbon copy of Favors or Gobert, and Wendell Carter isn't a carbon copy of Favors or Gobert, but I sure as hell think that they're more versatile offensively than either of those two players. And I also think that defensively combined, there's like, you just cannot convince me that if a team start like Favors isn't this mobile guy. He's not like this fleet of foot dancer out there gliding around screens, chasing like Klay Thompson or something, right? Like he's a pretty plodding big. And Gobert is, I mean, look, he's incredible, obviously, you know, just a total monster, but he's very much like a dude that hangs out by the basket and plays drop coverage and pick and roll. And so like, where do teams like that get into trouble, right? Like this is the thing that I'm kind of always like, okay, like, who are the teams that we're so worried about? Like, oh, they're going to expose these two big. They're going to expose us if we play two bigs. Look, who are these teams? Golden State? Are we really fucking worried about playing Golden State?
Well, I mean,
Houston?
Yeah.
Like, we're not going to be good when these teams are at their peak. Like, do we think the Knicks are going to play in the finals in a 7-game series against this version of the Golden State Warriors or this version of the Rockets? Personally, as much as I would love for the Knicks to become very good as fast as possible, I don't see that happening. And so, like, to me, what we need to be thinking about are, who are the teams that we are likely to be competing with, right? So I see the Celtics. I see probably the 76ers. And then after that, I'm not exactly sure. Like, maybe Milwaukee. I'm not sure.
Celtics and the Sixers are both, I would say, arguments against going
big,
right?
Are they? I mean, are you really, like, do you really think that Dario Saric at the four is going to play like Wendell Carter. Like, Dario Saric and Embiid are going to play
KP about, and Wendell Carter. What about the Embiid and Simmons and Covington?
Is Simmons going to be able to shoot anytime this century?
That's a good point.
Like, I understand. What about Boston?
Yeah.
They scored 79 fucking points against the Cavs in Game 7. Like, I'm sorry, but like, Boston is great. Like, they're obviously, as much as it hurts me and pains me to say it, like, they have a very bright future. But I am not convinced that future in, like, that bright future is predicated on them being this explosive offensive team that can light you up. Like, okay. They won a lot of games this year because they were the best defensive team in the league. That's why, maybe you can argue that they were the best defensive team in the league because they played small, but they didn't even play small all the time because they started Baines a bunch.
I do hear you. I just have trouble. To me, a lot of it comes down to this pesky fact of like three being more than two. And just when you have I know you're not someone who like disagrees with that, so I'm not trying to say that in a patronizing way to you, but it's like, when you have two bigs out there, that's two guys who now you can put into pick and roll, who have a little bit of a hard time when they get switched off their primary assignment on defense. That's another guy who has not the greatest time running out to the 3-point line. I mean, I know the Knicks defense was just filled with sieves everywhere but KP, and KP running out to the 3-point line last year, like, maybe shouldn't be what I have in my head when I think about this. But to me, it just makes it a little bit more likely that they'll have more trouble defending teams that do make three-point shooting, you know, a primary emphasis of their attack. Like, that's what I'm worried about. No matter who exists now, I feel like teams are going to keep getting built in a way that there's more and more shooting beyond the arc, and it's just going to make it harder to defend that. That's my worry.
No, and I don't actually even disagree that there are going to be plenty. Like, I don't think that there's any coming back from this unhealthy obsession with 3-point shooting. But that's a different argument. But I do think that, like, we need to, I mean, and I'm not an expert on stuff like this, but when I look at the best young players in the league right now, or like the next generation of guys, most of these guys are bigs. Most of these guys are bigs. Like Davis, Jokic,
yeah.
Embiid, Porzingis, Towns, right? Then in this draft, we have Ayton, Carter, Bagley, Jaren Jackson Jr., and I'm forgetting one that I can't remember right now.
Bamba.
Yeah, Mo Bamba. And then apparently, like, I'm not an expert on this, but, like, the 2020 class is also supposed to be loaded again with bigs. So it's like, to me, the trends of the league, right, like 3-point shooting is a trend, but the trend that you're kind of talking about to me isn't about 3-point shooting. It's more about small ball, like playing small, being mobile. And like, why is that a trend? Because it's because playing small unlocks matchups for teams like Golden State and for Houston that have players that are like maximized in that capacity. Now, is KP, like, if we're saying the Knicks are being built around Porzingis, is his potential, like, unquestionably tied to this idea of playing small? I don't think it necessarily is. I'm not saying, and, like, just to be clear, I was, before I started really digging into, like, draft research and stuff, I was very much like, if Carter's on the board there, you have to take him 100%. Like, right now, if I had Carter on the board and the two Bridges, I would probably take Miles. So I'm not, like, this guy that's, like, okay, totally, totally for Wendell Carter no matter what. But, like, I just don't – I think it's ridiculous to dismiss it because he's, like – I think to me, and just, like you said, in a vacuum, he's – I like him a lot more than some of these highly touted guys just because I think that he is the type of player – that will play within it. Like, he will elevate your team because of his ability to play within a team concept.
And yeah, it does seem like we've kind of been, I like this, we've been giving out strengths and weaknesses sort of within the just the flow of the conversation maybe a little bit more than we have in some of these other episodes. But I don't know if he said this explicitly, but it does seem like he has very high basketball IQ on both sides of the ball. And that's something that I really value tremendously and is really hard to teach. And I think goes a long way.
And it's something that we lack? I think it's something we lack. Yeah. I'm not saying KP's not, he's not like JR or anything out there, but I never watch him and feel like he's the most cerebral player I've watched.
I'm going to give him a break because I think that his defensive IQ is fairly high. And I do think, going back to my brilliant Clay analogy, last year was him just forcing it as the number one option, just throwing that Clay on the table. But I mean, he had a large body of work last season of making poor decisions offensively and forcing things and not playing very well within a team construct. I will say that.
Yeah, and I mean, and like 100% agree. His defensive IQ last year especially, like, was so much better. It was so much better than it had been. Just a lot less the stupid fouls, like pointless fouls.
Yeah, that was a huge improvement. We haven't done his report card yet, but he got so much better at that.
Yeah. And so, look, I mean, I guess really what we're talking about with Carter, like, your main hang up here is, can this guy defend in isolation on switches, right? Like, that's basically what we're talking about.
And yeah, that's mainly, yeah, I would say mainly, and then just being another big that you can put into pick and roll, two bigs that you can attack in the pick and roll, you know, that's it. Yeah.
Well, like, that's the thing is, I don't think teams really want to attack Porzingis in pick and roll anymore. Like, I don't think that that's really, like, that productive of a way to attack the Knicks. Now, maybe, like, all right, for a guy like Steph or Harden or something, like, yeah, sure, that might be great for them. But, like, I mean,
although maybe
they're top five players, right? like right. Any matchup is going to be kind of a matchup for them to attack.
But yeah. I wonder if having another, you know, plus rim protector mitigates somewhat putting a big in, you know, putting him in pick and roll and getting him on isolated on a guard. If he can have help from, let's say, a Carter coming weak side,
I wonder
if that extends the defensive position where you might not otherwise possession, I should say.
Yeah, I mean, like, my thing is, the Knicks were an average defense last year, and their starting lineup until KP got injured, they were like 15th or 16th in defensive rating at that point. I don't know. I have to go back and check. But they were basically, like, right on average. And they were starting such defensive stalwarts like Jared Jack at point guard and Enes Kanter at center. And our stronger perimeter defenders were Tim Hardaway Jr. and Courtney Lee's reputation.
I love the Courtney Lee plot shots.
Is Wendell Carter likely to be better than Enes Kanter on defense?
Sure.
I think so. Sure. Like, I don't even think it's close. it's not going to be close. He's going to be a plus defender at the five, probably. I also think that he's not a guy I want switching out on isolation every time down.
Right.
But, like, if he has to do that five or six times a game, I guess a better way to think of it is, what murdered us with Kanter was that you could literally just throw Kanter in a pick and roll and you were almost guaranteed a good look. Or you could just run the pick and roll to get a switch and whoever got the switch could just easily drive by Kanter. Right? Like, that was it. That's all you really had to do if you wanted to do it. And I just don't think that that's going to be that easy to do with Carter. Maybe next year, because he's a rookie. Maybe first couple years, you know, it takes time to, like we said, even with KP, like, yeah, he had all these plus rim protection numbers his first couple years, but you could take him out of the game because he was committing so many dumb fouls, and a lot of that because he was out of position, blah, blah, blah. Like, so, I mean, yeah, maybe first couple years you'll be able to take advantage of Carter like that. But, like, this is a smart kid. This is a kid that, you know, he was debating about, he, like, got into Harvard, okay? Like, he got into Harvard. Legitimately thinking about going there before he went to this really stupid school, Duke. and that's sarcasm for any, like, Duke fans out there that think I'm taking shots at them. I wouldn't do that. But yeah, like, I'll bet on a guy like that because I believe in his ability to improve. I felt like when I watched him this year, I just, like you said, like, you know, you watch him, he looks like he plays like a smart player. I don't know how else to say it other than that, but he just plays, especially when you know, we'll talk about Bagley a little later, but like, yeah, when you compare him to Bagley, it's so different in their styles of play.
Well, why don't we move on to Bagley? Are you ready to talk about Bagley?
Yeah. And I mean, that was all I had on Carter.
I could tell you were petering out there. So I just want to, you know,
you saved me from myself.
I wanted to throw you the life raft. You're not supposed to jump in and touch. I'm not allowed to touch you, right? Because you'll pull me down and drown us both. Is that the thing?
Are we talking about Cape Penis here?
All right, we're going to talk about Marvin Bagley in just a moment. Psych! We're not going to talk about Marvin Bagley on today's show. That's for part two. You got to tune in tomorrow for that one. But I do want to thank you guys very much for listening to part one of Schwinny desperately trying to talk me into his deep, pathological need for the Knicks to draft a big in this year's draft. It's sad to see someone you care about, you know, fall so far, but we got to pick him up. You know what I mean? If you run into him online, just let him know you're there for him and you're going to support him even as he goes through this temporary insanity, quite frankly, of demanding that the Knicks draft a big. But like I said, that is it for us for today's episode of Locked On Knicks. Thank you so much for listening. If you got a moment, rate us on iTunes. Subscribe to the show if you have not already. Tell your friends about the sensation that is Locked On Knicks if you have not already. Tell your local baker about Locked On Knicks if you have not already. They like sweet treats. And what's a sweeter treat than a brand new episode of Locked On Knicks? You know what I'm saying? Follow us on Twitter if you want to get in on our bonus takes and just general camaraderie while we're on Twitter. We have some fun conversations over there. Locked On Knicks. You can also follow me on Twitter, NBA Injury Report. Be chill to each other. I don't always follow this advice. I try to. Sometimes I try to be nice, though. Does that make me a hypocrite? I don't know. Maybe it does. I'm not perfect. Spay and neuter your pets. If it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it right down. Always salt the pasta water. But over this, don't disappoint me. And take that. The data. Tune in tomorrow for another episode of Locked On Knicks. Peace.